the hustle and bustle of the festive season underway, it's already becoming a December to remember, as far as news goes. Coming up on this episode of The Eagle, we'll go over the top headlines.
But for anyone who is listening, who is driving a truck that is 10 feet and 11 inches or higher, stay away from this bridge. Hear my words.
We'll learn about a stunningly simple reason why math and science doesn't come as easily to some people, and how to fix that.
So here's the deal, spatial reasoning.
And we'll get the latest info on premiere dates and where you can watch some of the movies and TV shows that were recently shot in the Capital Region.
The North American rights to the movie were bought by IFC Films, and so they're going to distribute it, and they set it for April 28th.
This is The Eagle, a Times Union podcast, a look inside our newsroom. I'm Jessica Marshall.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Welcome to The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall. Okay, let's discuss now what appeared in the Times Union and on timesunion.com this week. All right, we're back with Times Union Editor-in-Chief Casey Seiler. We're going to talk about the top stories this week. Last week, a top staffer, a male, at New York Attorney General Tish James's office resigned amid sexual harassment allegations. Now, this week, the AG has finally talked about it publicly. So tell us, what's that situation and what did she say?
So this involved Letitia James's chief of staff, Ibrahim Khan, who in early October was the subject of allegations of sexual harassment brought against him. Now, we, the Times Union, as well as at least the New York Times and potentially other outlets, began asking about his job status and whether he was under investigation. And I know what the Times Union asked. I don't know what the New York Times asked early last week. So basically 10 days before when we're talking now. And what we got back was, we'll have to get back to you. And they never got back to us before Friday, when the New York Times revealed that he had resigned from the office amid these allegations, and that the Attorney General's office was not really saying much more than that, other than the fact that there had been an outside investigation that was conducted. And that's pretty much where things stood, despite abundant questions being asked by the Times Union and certainly other outlets, until Monday night, when the AG's office put out a timeline of the investigation, which failed once again to answer the question of the very central question of whether or not the allegations against Mr. Khan had been substantiated. So yet again, more questions that were unanswered. And then finally, on Wednesday at midday, the Attorney General's office was forced to concede that, yes, the allegations had been sustained, and he resigned basically in the teeth of this investigation. So it would appear that what we have here is the Attorney General's office responding in a very confidential but apparently appropriate manner to these allegations, but in my humble opinion, absolutely a failing in terms of the public communication surrounding a top staffer of the Attorney General's office, which is especially surprising considering that Letitia James was in charge of organizing and contracting for the investigation of the sexual misconduct allegations that ended up forcing the resignation of former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Once again, there is substance and then there's communication. But on the communication front, at least, this was something of an epic fail for the Attorney General.
All right, you can read more about that at Capital Confidential, our Capital Confidential section on timesunion.com. Moving on to another story that's in that realm, we have a new SUNY chancellor as of this week, former state ed commissioner and former U.S. education secretary, John King, in that or is going to be appointed in that position. What can you tell us about that?
We're talking about getting a new chancellor for the SUNY system almost exactly a year after the resignation of Jim Mylotras, who tumbled from that role after revelations about past text messages in which he kind of berated, slimed one of the aforementioned Governor Cuomo's accusers, and also that in prior to becoming chancellor, he had let his temper get away from him, I think would be the most charitable way to describe it, with underlings in a previous SUNY role. John King, who is going to take over as chancellor in January, is an exceedingly well-known figure in education circles from his tenure as commissioner roughly a decade ago in New York, which was a period that kind of was shadowed by the very controversial rollout of the Common Core standards and the standardized testing that went along with it that were exceedingly controversial. And King was perhaps sinned against and a sinner in terms of the kind of public communication and rollout, not a capital sin, surely, but it was a tough period. He was beleaguered without a doubt. Many in education circles in New York were happy to see him go. Others saw him as a victim of serious opprobrium from teachers' unions and that type of thing that did not like the standardized testing that came with the Common Core standards. But now he's back, and many of those same organizations that assailed him have said, we look forward to, you know, working with him on SUNY issues. The system obviously faces significant challenges. Still, many the campuses are still dealing with the after effects of coronavirus, and it's going to be interesting to see this new tenure begin.
Absolutely. And he commands quite a high salary, too, as we reported in the Times.
Yes. Basically, three-quarters of a mil in base salary, as well as a lot of allowances for housing and transportation and that kind of thing. And that has already been the subject of tetchy statements from really folks on both sides, but especially on the Republican side of the aisle in the legislature.
All right. Well, we will be following that as he takes his position in January. Let's go to some local news now, where a Schenectady minister was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison this week for killing his 4-year-old foster son in a very brutal fashion. The details of this story are deeply disturbing. But what happened in court this week?
Daquan Green, who is 29 years old, was, as you noted, convicted and sentenced this week to 25 years to life in state prison for the beating death of a 4-year-old child who was in his household under circumstances that are still the subject of great controversy and involving Child Protective Services and foster care officials in both Albany and Schenectady County. Green lived and the child known as Charlie died in Schenectady. And we are talking almost exactly 2 years ago. What was especially notable beyond the sentence is that the judge in this case, Schenectady County Judge Matthew Sipinewski, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, really excoriated Green, calling him a sociopath and implying that he deserves to be subjected to physical punishment in prison. Basically, that he should be forced to do wall squats similar to those that he forced his young victim to do. And he said, and I'm quoting here, when he gets to prison, quote, "You're going to go there and everyone is going to know, baby killer. Good luck with that," which, you know, is pretty spicy to come from the bench. His attorney had no comment after the sentencing. We shall see if this potentially becomes part of an appeal. Those comments go pretty far in hitting someone convicted of even a serious crime, such as the murder of a child, without a doubt.
Indeed, one of the more difficult stories to read. All right, sticking with Schenectady County here, what we have been calling the notorious Glenville train bridge has struck again this week, or more to the point, a truck has struck it and had its top completely sheared off. Again, this is not the first time this has happened. And in this case, toilet paper went flying everywhere. So what's the deal with that bridge?
Yeah, Pete DeMola, not for the first time in his outstanding tenure at the Times Union, it has written about another truck that fell victim to the Glen Ridge Rail Bridge. This one was sheared off just about as cleanly as you can imagine. The 10-foot, 11 clearance sign is just perfectly positioned in one of the photographs that we ran on top of this perfect accordion truck top. But just, you know, I think that this is the last time this is going to happen.
I hope you're right. Now, there was some talk, right, about changing the signage a bit to make it more apparent earlier on that road before trucks maybe get too close.
They have done signage. They have done different traffic. They've tried to rearrange the kind of traffic pattern. This is just a remarkable, and it's not like this is the only bridge in America that this is subject to. We did an outstanding investigation just a couple of months ago, looking at bridge strikes, and you know they're a problem all over the place. This is just the Capital Region's most truck magnetic bridge, without a doubt. But it's been pointed out that can we raise the bridge? That's pretty difficult. Can we dig the road lower? Also very difficult. Some people have blamed, you know, digital navigation software for sending trucks under this bridge when they shouldn't. They're too tall to go through it. But I've got to say, I mean, look, these are truck accidents. Thank God nobody was hurt this time around. But there is something deeply hilarious about this. And for anyone who is listening, who is driving a truck that is 10 feet and 11 inches or higher, stay away from this bridge. Hear my words.
All right. We will put that out there for everybody to hear. One last thing before I let you go. It's a bit of a brighter topic, I think, literally and figuratively.
Nice. I see what you did there.
Yeah, we are well into the holiday season now. And one of the favorite things that folks like to do here in the Capital Region during this season is to go see holiday light displays. So what can you tell us about our contribution to helping people do that this year?
Our digital team has put together a super cool interactive map that will serve as a guide to everything from Santa's Playland, holiday lights, to the Festival of Trees, the Jungle Bells 2022 driving tour. That's all the way down in Binghamton. You can expend a lot of gasoline across beautiful upstate New York going to check out holiday lights. One thing you will not be able to do this year is view, at least live, the Capital Region's best known offering of this kind. That's, of course, Capital Holiday Lights in the Park, which used to happen in Washington Park in downtown Albany. It's on something of a hiatus this year. They're doing a virtual offering. Next year, it's going to be back at the Altamont Fairgrounds. But there you go. Check it out. And we hope it is a dazzling display for young and old.
All right. Thanks so much, Casey. We'll check back in with you next week.
Thanks, Jess.
As always, you can learn more about all of the topics and the issues that we discuss on this podcast at timesunion.com. Are you good at math? Or are you someone who has always thought maybe they weren't so good at it? In the case of the latter, it turns out there's a reason for that. You might not have learned a very valuable tangential skill, couldn't resist a little math pun there, something that could potentially have made grasping concepts in math and science a lot easier for you. A Siena College physics professor recently received a grant from the National Science Foundation to develop ways to help students learn this missing skill, and hopefully with it get a better grasp of math and science and maybe consider pursuing careers in STEM. As someone self-described, as not being great at math, I wanted to know more. So I reached out to Times Union education reporter Kathleen Moore, who spent some time over at Siena learning about this research. I have my confession to make that I never did very well in sciences like physics and chemistry. I mean, I passed, I'll say that. I was able to pass the classes and, I got decent grades, but I never really got it. And the article that you wrote recently about a professor from Siena College kind of goes a little way toward explaining maybe why someone like me didn't do well in those sciences. So what did you write about? Give me the 35,000 foot view.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Spatial reasoning. This is a learnable, a teachable skill. I always thought it was something you were just born with or you weren't, right? And we always hear the jokes, women can't read maps. It's a reference to the fact that some people sometimes stereotypically say women, don't have good spatial reasoning. And this device that this Siena professor created helps teach that, because she said it was so needed by her students.
What do you mean exactly by spatial reasoning? What is that?
So spatial reasoning is the ability to look at a two-dimensional drawing, like a line drawing, or even someone just describing something, and in your mind, be able to visualize it in three dimensions and turn it around in your head. So imagine a cylinder. Now imagine that you're looking at that cylinder lengthwise so you can look through it like a telescope. Mm-hmm. Now imagine that you've turned the cylinder so that you're looking at it up and down from the outside and you can see how round it is. That is three-dimensional thinking. Unfortunately, for the sciences, it's much more complicated than imagining a telescope.
Because I'm sitting here like, I can visualize that. I know this.
Right. It's imagining things that you've never seen, mm-hmm. like the inside of a neuron, or the way that magnetic fields or electrical fields respond to other interference. And sometimes professors will do things in college, like they'll take a piece of styrofoam and they'll start cutting it apart to try to teach you this skill. But what this does is it's called augmented reality. What it means is you look at a screen, like a tablet, and you're looking through the tablet at a little cube made out of paper that you're holding. But because of what she's done in the program to create augmented reality, as you hold the cube projects on the screen in three dimensions, whatever it is you're looking at, and you can tilt it, move it around with your hand and see, for example, the electrical fields and the way they respond going north to south and things like that.
Yeah. That sounds great. And you said in your article, this professor who has secured the NSF grant to make more of this type of augmented reality for classrooms, you said that based on what you observed and what the students and the professor told you, that like these concepts that would take an entire class or series of classes to kind of sink in for some students, like took 5 seconds, right?
Wow, they got it like that. It was amazing. Really worth it. Now, obviously, you still need to understand, the science behind it, but it helps so much. And although, there's all those jokes that, it's women who aren't good at spatial reasoning. I interviewed men who are in these science classes who are in like junior and senior level, upper level physics classes, mm-hmm. who said they too were struggling with this. And this was helping them actually develop that spatial reasoning. That apparently kids will often develop it by playing video games, certain video games like Minecraft, or put together Lego, where you look at a piece of paper that, tells you how to put pieces together and you build this three-dimensional item.
You said, that often, obviously, there's the jokes about women, which are not funny anymore or never were funny. But that kind of goes back, or at least the professor said that kind of goes back to what we played with as kids.
Society says, in general, obviously we're all trying to rise above that now, but society says you put a doll into the hands of the two-year-old girl, you put Lego into the hands of the two-year-old boy. Maybe not two-year-olds, they might swallow it. So there's some kids who were able to develop spatial reasoning just through play when they were kids, but many, many people of both genders don't develop it, and yet they are interested in science. They're passionate. They've got ideas. They've got creativity and curiosity. This is no reason for them to not succeed in science. We need these curious, smart people. And so this can actually teach them that crucial skill that they also need.
What is the plan for that grant money? What exactly are they going to do with that?
So some of the students I interviewed are going to spend the entire winter making more of these. You have to build an augmented reality for every concept. It takes quite a lot of work, quite a lot of coding to put together one, to just show, for example, a biochemistry reaction between two molecules. And you need to do a different reaction between a different two molecules. It's a completely different process. So it's going to take them months, but they want to put together dozens and dozens more of these. One of the students is doing her student teaching right now. She is a senior chemistry major, and she's going to be teaching high school science. She wants to also make these on a different level, obviously, for her high school students so that they can start learning spatial reasoning at an earlier age. In fact, the Siena professor thinks that kids should be taught this, you know, much earlier, middle school or even earlier than that, that this is a crucial skill we all sort of need in modern life, a skill, sadly, I never learned.
When you went into their classroom and kind of saw some of these models, right?
Yeah.
Did you have any breakthroughs yourself?
No, sadly not. They also do require that you have a good sense of science. They were showing me, they were very eager. They were like, look, now if you look at this electric field and you see how it's stronger at the poles than it is at the center. And I was like, huh, interesting. I know nothing about magnet and electric fields.
But theoretically, right? So if you decided tomorrow to go take a physics class at a community college and this, you know, these models were used, like theoretically you could learn spatial reasoning, right? As an adult.
Oh yes. Yes. You can absolutely learn it. It's just like any other skill, like math, like reading. You know how people used to say that there were some people who were just good at math mm-hmm. and everyone else was just bad at math. And we know that that's not true anymore. We know now that actually you just need to teach math better and everyone will learn it. This is the exact same. People have always thought, oh, you know, boys are just good at spatial reasoning and girls just aren't. And it turns out that actually this is a skill that everybody can learn.
Wow, that's encouraging. That kind of makes me want to pick up the books again.
Maybe pick up some Lego and start working on that.
After the break, when is Gilded Age Season 2 premiering? And what about The White House Plumbers, starring Woody Harrelson? We'll find out the latest status of movies and TV shows that were shot in the Capital Region recently.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Eagle, a Times Union podcast. I'm Jessica Marshall. Several locations in the Capital Region, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, Cohoes, Saratoga Springs, the list goes on, were used as backdrops for major film and television productions in the last 2 years. While they were in town, the region was abuzz with news and photos from sets and glimpses of celebs like Woody Harrelson, Owen Wilson, Lena Headey, and Hilary Swank out and about. But we haven't heard much about when those productions are premiering and where we can watch them. Times Union Features reporter CJ Lias did a little sleuthing and found out some info. It turns out that some of these are coming soon. I spoke to him this week to get the latest. Do you have any sense of why so many productions came to the Capital Region in the last 2 years?
Well, I mean, in the case of, just to go ahead and name one of them, The Gilded Age, it's partially for the same reason other movies like Age of Innocence and The Bostonians and Ironweed came to town.
Ironweed had a specific reason to be here.
Yes. But it also, we have so many still existing buildings and landscapes from various time periods going all the way back to the Gilded Age's 1880s, I believe.
New York is a collection of villages. The old have been in charge since before the revolution, until the new people invaded.
New York City doesn't have as much of old New York City anymore, or it's just very cumbersome to shoot there. So they come to towns like Troy, Albany, Schenectady to double for Manhattan in past time periods.
Do we have like great tax benefits as well?
That is the other thing. And I wrote about that last year during when these productions were here filming, that every person I talked to in local film communities, that was what the common denominator was. They said, oh yeah, the tax credits are really an incentive for filmmakers to come here.
All right, let's talk about the specific productions that were shot here. You started talking about the Gilded Age. What's going on with the Gilded Age? They came here, they did a season here, it aired, and then they came back, right?
Right. So this year they filmed season two.
They came back for more.
HBO. And they actually expanded out to, they filmed in Albany, they filmed in Cohoes and various other places, not just in downtown Troy this time. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, in the spring and summer when they were here. There is no specific date yet for it to air, but it just says sometime in 2023. Now, the first season debuted in January of this year. I don't think it's going to make that January mark for 2023, but, you know, HBO and streaming and things like that, they don't have to follow the same kind of schedules. In doing the research, the final season of another HBO show is Dark Materials. So it's going to run through January 23rd in that same time slot that The Gilded Age was in, if it's going to continue in that time slot on Monday nights. So it obviously would not premiere until January 30th at the earliest.
Gotcha. I love your deductive reasoning. You're like, I'm applying some basic math and deductive reasoning to determine when this show is going to air. I love it. All right. What else filmed here in the last 2 years that you researched?
Yep. If we continue with TV shows and HBO, The White House Plumbers filmed here all the way back in June and August of last year, 2021. It's a behind the scene look at the actual architects of the Watergate break-in and cover-up, Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy and their crew. And it stars Woody Harrelson and Justin Theroux. And Donald Gleason. It actually had a controversy when it was here. There was a work stoppage because the executive producer, David Mandel, who was also the producer of Veep, allegedly got into an altercation with a member of the props department, and it got very heated, causing the whole props department to walk out. So there was a work stoppage while they were here in Albany because they were filming downtown using the Capitol and the Education Building and various things to double for Washington, D.C. in the 70s.
I remember the pictures on TimesUnion.com were quite epic. It looks like the whole, you know, that whole part of town had transformed and gone back in time. It's pretty amazing.
And Woody Harrelson was just on set all the time, whether he was filming scenes or not, and riding bicycles around the downtown Albany. So
there was some stoppage. This happened a while ago.
It was short, relatively. They came back about, a week and a half later, finished filming here, and, you know, continued on filming elsewhere, other parts of the country. But then it kind of, we hadn't heard anything. Well, now it's, the commercials are out and the HBO website and IMDb, they all listed as starting in January. They don't give a specific date for the first episode, but sometime January 2023.
Now let's go to two movies that you looked into. The first one kind of hit very close to home, I would say, right?
Yes, Mother's Milk. Hilary Swank stars in this drama. She's a Times Union reporter who's also the mother of two sons, one a drug addict and I think a dealer, I'm not sure, and the other one is a cop. She investigates the death of her one son. And it's set here, obviously, and it was filmed here. And the director, Miles Joris Perrefeet, he is a product of the filmmaking community here. His parents are both well-known people in the arts. And he had made some other films here, shorts, and then a theatrical feature. And this is a big deal. But it was all under the radar when it was being filmed. There were scenes filmed here in the newsroom that...
About 20 feet from us, right?
Yes, but we in the newsroom didn't even know it was happening until it was happening. I think we that was part of the deal. We had to keep quiet about it. But a lot of the production, nobody knew anything. And the reason it got out is a local woman's dog ran away. And she went searching for it all over the place. She was driving around downtown Albany, and she came across the old Greyhound bus station, and there was a lot of activity going on there. Well, it turned out it was a filming location for this movie. And she asked someone on the set if anyone had seen her dog. And they said, yeah, actually, we did find a dog. A celebrity that's working on this movie found it. And they said, wait here. And a car pulled up, the door opened, and there was Hilary Swank sitting in the car with the woman's dog on her lap.
That is a one-of-a-kind, amazing story. And that's hilarious that that was kind of the catalyst for the news about this movie.
Exactly, because she had asked for Hilary Swank's autograph, the woman did, and Hilary Swank said, how about we actually take a picture of you, me, and the dog instead? So they did that, and the woman posted it on social media, and it just went viral.
Yes, that's amazing. You could see that on TimesUnion.com. But when is this movie coming out? Is it done filming? Is it?
There is no date yet. There are talks ongoing sometime in the future, sometime in 2023, to have a premiere here in Albany. Whether that happens is still up in the air, or when it happens, and I'm sure it won't be the main premiere. I think it'll just be for, you know, to give appreciation to the local community that helped make this movie.
So let's go on to the last movie that you took a look at here. And that movie is Paint.
This is another one, long in process, but you know, Hollywood development and release schedules are always prone to delays and complications, and then throw COVID into it. This one was filmed in Saratoga and parts of Albany back in the spring of 2021. And it stars Owen Wilson as a Bob Ross-like television personality, the famous painter with the happy little trees, with the perm and the soft-spoken whisper. He's playing someone similar to him who has a public television show where he teaches people to paint in Vermont. And again, Owen Wilson, just like Woody Harrelson, was seen all over the place while they were filming this. We didn't hear much about it, but now it started on the festival circuit and things like that. The North American rights to the movie were bought by IFC Films. And so they're going to distribute it. And they set it for April 28th.
That's exciting. We have a premiere date. That's definitely something to look forward to. So you only wrote about 4 productions for this article, but there are actually more, right? Give us a little Eagle podcast exclusive.
And there was another TV show that was filmed partially in this area in Schenectady called Three Women.
Yes, I remember that one as well.
Yeah, it's based on a nonfiction book from 2019. And that book follows the emotional and sexual lives of 3 different women from different backgrounds in different parts of the United States. And so they made a TV show about it, and starring Shailene Woodley and Betty Gilpin and DeWanda Wise as the 3 women. It's a Showtime production, and there is no date yet. It just, all the promotional material says coming soon.
Gotcha. Well, that's frustrating, because we really want to know when is it coming out. And what was the other one?
This past Sunday, Hallmark Channel Christmas movie aired called The Holiday Spectacular.
I want to tell you about an exciting last-minute audition.
You're giving up your future. What, to dance?
A period piece set in the 50s, and it was about a Philadelphia heiress who lies to her family and takes off to New York City, not telling them that she's actually there because she got accepted to the Radio City Music Hall Rockettes for their annual Christmas show.
Ah.
And so she hides it from them, and then, of course, you know, romantic entanglements ensue. She meets a man whose family owns a deli in Manhattan. Well, that deli is actually DeFazio's Imports in Troy, New York. That's where they filmed it. Double for a deli in New York City in 1957.
And then, as you said, we're likely to get more stuff coming to the region in the future.
It is very exciting talking to, you can hear the restrained excitement when I talk to people like Debbie Godecki from the Albany Film Commission and various other people in the different cities around here that handle filming liaison for productions coming into town and things like that. They all know a lot more than we know, and they're very excited about it. So I predict we're going to be writing a lot more about movies and TV shows coming here and having a lot more photo galleries online for them.
All right, that's it for this week. I'm Jessica Marshall.
We'll be back next week with another look inside the newsroom here at the Times Union. In the meantime, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, or head on over to timesunion.com for the latest news and features. The Eagle is a production of the Times Union. It's produced and edited by me, Jessica Marshall, with help from the Times Union digital team and the newsroom. Special thanks this week to Casey Seiler, Kathleen Moore, and CJ Lias for their contributions to this episode. And stay tuned. We have got a brand new podcast series by the Times Union debuting very, very soon. Here's a taste of what's in store. It's been 15 years since 12-year-old Jalique Rainwalker vanished. His disappearance from rural upstate New York was ruled a probable child homicide. But no one has ever been charged, and his body has never been found. This is Rainwalker, the Lost Boy. I'm Jessica Marshall.
And I'm Wendy Lepertoire.
In this podcast from the Times Union, we'll take a deep dive into this mystery, the case of a missing child that has unsettled New York's Capital Region and beyond for more than a decade.
Coming soon, wherever you listen to podcasts.